We've been looking at life in the kingdom. The Sermon on the Mount is a picture of what the kingdom of God looks like. It's an introduction to how we live in that kingdom. And so we've been looking at it carefully together. This morning, I want to take just a few minutes to real quickly look at something that I think is an important aspect of kingdom life, an important part of the sermon, and it actually prepares us for what happens at the table. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. We separate the physical world from the spiritual world. In our minds, in our experience, that's how we understand things around us. There's the physical world that we can see, touch, hear. Then there's the spiritual world around us that we can't see but we know is real. Jesus, I don't think really saw it that way. I don't think he really separated the two that much. Because what he teaches us in this text is that how you interact with material things says a great deal about where you are spiritually. For him, the material things were a part of the spiritual experience as well. And so he says, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, because a moth can come and eat it. It can rust. It can be stolen. It can be destroyed. It can be burned up in a fire. Instead, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Nothing bad can happen to your stuff there. So he says, think about what's really important in life. What are you collecting with the greatest vigor? What is most important to you? He says, if your focus is here, then you're like the guy who had so much stuff, he had to build bigger barns to store his stuff. And he had to build bigger barns to store his stuff. And then bigger barns to store his stuff. And then one day he died. And he said, now what? Now your kids and grandkids have to fight over the stuff and get rid of it and send it to Goodwill. How did it benefit you? And Jesus says, don't. In the kingdom, once you're a disciple, once you're a part of what God's doing, don't settle for the stuff that you see. The stuff that makes it so easy for us to get distracted from that which is really important. He says, you be about the work of investing in the kingdom. You build treasures in the kingdom that will be waiting for you in glory. What do you spend most of your time thinking about? Working on, worrying over? Are they things of the kingdom? Are they things of God? Things that will last? Or is it really just about accumulating more stuff? You see, there's not really a big distinction between material world and spiritual world. For those in the kingdom, the spiritual part of us shows up in all aspects of life. He shows this to us in three very important ways. There are three things that he wants us to be very careful about. And the first one is priorities. He wants us to be real careful about our priorities. That's why he says, don't lay up for yourselves treasures here. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where your treasure is, that's where you find your heart. So look at what's most important in your life. That tells you where your heart is. That tells you where you are. He says it's important for us to consider our priorities. What's really important? Young man was involved in a car accident, one car accident, but it was a very nice car. The policeman showed up, and when he walked up to the young man was saying, Oh, my BMW, my BMW. And the policeman said, sir, are you okay? He said, oh, my BMW. And the police officer said, you know, I'm sorry about your car, but you've got more important things to worry about. Have you, look at your arm. Look at your left arm. Your hand is mangled. And the young man went, oh, my Rolex, my Rolex. Once in a while, we've got to stop and think about those priorities. What captures our attention? That's a silly story, but I have a real story. When I was a youth pastor, one of my students was in a car wreck. His mother was in the wreck with him. And after it was over, I got to him as quick as I could. I went and said, well, how are you? He said, oh, my car is just totaled. It's so messed up. I said, well, tell me about the accident. He told me every detail about how the car did this and it did that, and then he's got this dent and this bang, and now it's all about the car. I said, well, wasn't your mama with you? Yeah. Well, how is she? You don't understand how much that car cost me. This was a teenager. That young man had a long way to grow up. Now, I don't know that he ever did. I didn't stay in touch with him. But that just sent a chill through me. What's important? Where are your priorities? So many people spend so much time and energy making sure they've got the most stuff. And one of these days, they're going to wind up hopefully going home to glory without many treasures there. What's important to you? Check your priorities. Luke chapter 12 and verse 15 says, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Not even when you got a bunch of stuff does that really define your life. We think it does. But I promise you, there's more to life than stuff. The second thing that he wants us to take very careful inventory of, second thing he wants us to pay attention to is our focus. He talks about our priorities and then he talks about our focus. And so here he says in verse 22, the lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. Now they didn't understand all the physiology, you know, all the way our bodies work. They didn't understand quite as much then as we do now. Jesus understood exactly what he was saying, because the way your eye works is light comes in. Light comes in, and then you got all the cones and rods and all the stuff that does its thing. but it's because light comes in the eye that you see. And so he says, now, since that's the only way that you can see, as light comes in your eye, if the eye is messed up, then light can't come in. If you can't see correctly, then light can't do what it's supposed to do in you. And so he says, verse 23, but if your eye is bad, your whole body is full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? How terrible it must be to be in complete darkness. His point is clear. The eyes are the only way that you can see clearly. You want your eyes to be able to focus. What he's talking about in the context here, he says, don't lay up for yourself stuff here. Instead, invest in kingdom. Lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. Keep your focus clear. The eyes are the only way to focus, and if you get, you know, you get your eyes on the wrong thing, they're not clear. Light can't do what it's supposed to do. You lose your focus. You lose your purpose. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 says, I'm afraid that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. In other words, keep your focus. It's real easy for the enemy to come say, look at this pretty thing. Wow. That's what he did to Eve. You remember? For Eve, it was, look how pretty this is. And Genesis says she noticed that it was appealing to the eye. She got her focus messed up. The enemy still works that way. He wants to distract us from the one who is most important. Colossians chapter 3, beginning at verse 1, says, since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Where is your focus? What do you pay attention to? The third thing that he wants us to be aware of, wants us to pay attention to, is our commitment. He speaks about our priorities. He speaks about our focus. And then he speaks about our commitment. Look at what he says. We're in verse 24 now. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will hold to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon is a word that means stuff. You cannot serve God and mammon. He says you can't serve two masters. There's a couple of things that's very important there. One is a clear statement. The other is an implication. The first clear statement is that you can only have one master. You can only have one person who's in charge of your life. The second is the implication, and that is that you will have a master. That's implied in the statement. He says you can't have two masters. You'll love one or hate the other. You can't serve God and mammon. The implication is clear. You will serve somebody. And that's something that we've got to understand about ourselves. And it's hard for us to understand because we're Americans. We're free. And it's even harder to understand because we're Texans. We're not only free, but we're strong, independent, free types. Don't tell me I'm going to be a slave. I'm telling you, you're going to be a slave. When we were created to serve. The issue at hand is not will you serve. The issue at hand is who will you serve? Or what will you serve? Bob Dylan got it right on this one point. Bob Dylan was before my time, but some of you remember him. He said, you may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. It might be the devil, it might be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. You might be a state trooper, you might be a young Turk, you might be the head of some big TV network, you might be rich, you might be poor, you may be blind or lame, you may be living in another country under another name, but you're going to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. It might be the devil, it might be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. And the question is, who will you serve? I read about the young man that was in the streets of Chicago. He wore one of those sandwich boards. And on the front of the sandwich board, it said, "I'm Jesus Fool." As he walked by, people would look at it and laugh at him. "I'm Jesus Fool." And then when they passed him, they'd look back, and on the back it said, "Whose fool are you?" You see, we're going to serve somebody. The only question is, who or what do you serve? One day Joshua called the people together and he said, "Listen, serve the Lord." In Joshua 24, I think 14, "Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness," is what he challenged them to do. Fear the Lord and serve him. And then he said, "But if you don't like that idea, then you can go back and serve all these gods of all these people around us. There are a bunch of gods to choose from. But I'm going to tell you one thing," he said in Joshua 15. "If serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve." And then he goes on to say all these different gods around us. "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." He said, "I make my choice today. You make your choice today. Who will you serve?" These three things Jesus calls us to pay attention to: our priorities, our focus, and our commitment. You know, the amazing thing is that the table does the very same thing. The table says, look at your priorities, look at your focus, look at your commitment. When we come to the table, we eat the bread that represents the broken body of Jesus when he died on the cross. We drink the cup that represents the blood that he shed when he died on the cross. That death, that sacrificial death for us, tore open that veil that separated man from God. Brought forgiveness of sin if we'll receive that free gift. And every once in a while we need to be reminded of the cost. The free gift is free to us, but it cost him a great deal. Every once in a while we need to be drawn back to Calvary. And as we are, we need to do three things. We need to reconsider our priorities. Does what Jesus did on the cross drive who I am? We need to reconsider our focus. Am I about him? Or do I expect him to be about me? It drives us to reconsider our commitment. He died for me. Am I living for him? I'm living for somebody or something. Is it him?